Good morning, and thank you for joining me on the Path to Liberty. I'm Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, and this is the show for Wednesday, May 3rd, 2023. Yesterday, the Florida legislature, the House specifically, gave final approval to a bill to basically ban the use of a central bank digital currency, a CBDC, as money within the state of Florida. And the vote was 116-1. Which is pretty incredible. It hasn't been signed into law yet. It's got to be transmitted to the governor. But since the whole thing was actually originally presented as an idea from the governor himself, I'm sure it'll be signed in the coming 1 to 2 weeks as he's required at most. And I want to discuss that today. But first, a little strategy from the founders, the old revolutionaries, discussing how to deal with things that are that we're facing, whether they're on the way in a concrete way or we think they're very likely. Here's Thomas Jefferson from the Notes on the State of Virginia in 1785-ish, we'll say. He said, "The time to guard against corruption and tyranny is before they shall have gotten hold on us. It is better to keep the wolf out of the fold than to trust to drawing his teeth and talons after he shall have entered." So if you think about a central bank digital currency, some people will tell us, well, there is no such thing right now, so why go all crazy and pass some legislation to ban it? Well, of course, because as Thomas Jefferson here told us, you have to do it. If you think it's on the way, do something about it now. Whether this is the absolute correct thing or not, we don't actually know. I don't know. But it certainly is the right approach strategically if you think it's coming, and I certainly do. Here's John Dickinson in his very famous Letters from a Farmer in Pennsylvania, letter number 9, published in 1767, or he wrote them in 1767. It was published late in the year and throughout 1768 in response to the hated Townsend Acts. And in each letter he signed off with a specific phrase in Latin, and we translate them as well, but he said specifically, oppose a disease at its beginning. Now, these were the most widely read documents on American liberty up until publication of Thomas Paine's Common Sense in 1776. Letters from a Farmer in Pennsylvania from Dickinson. And so it was a widely accepted maxim that if you have a disease coming, you don't wait until it actually infects you to the point of death. You oppose it at the beginning. And that's Jefferson and Dickinson on the CBDC. I think we can put it today. Here's from an article that we published by Mike Meharry just this, well, late last night, actually, overnight, about the dangers of a central bank digital currency. I'm not going to get in too much detail about this, but here's how Mike puts it. At the root of the move towards CBDC is what some call the war on cash. For years, governments have looked to ways to eliminate physical cash because it's hard to control. I can put it under my mattress, and no one even has to know if I have it. And if you and I do a cash transaction, no record exists. Well, if no one keeps one. That's a problem for government officials who would like to tax our transactions or possibly prohibit them altogether. So he says, enter central bank digital currencies. And he goes a little further, just some examples. He said, imagine if there was no cash. It would be impossible to hide even the smallest transaction from the government's eyes. Something as simple as your morning trip to get a coffee wouldn't be a secret from government officials. It's a tool of, they already have almost total surveillance. And it's hard to think, oh, well, the surveillance state can get even worse beyond Section 702 of FISA, beyond the NSA, Section 215, beyond the FBI and the rest, all the mass warrantless surveillance and drones and cell site simulators and license plate readers and tracking devices and all this facial recognition, gait recognition, gunshot recognition, audio. And they're going to make it even worse by attaching surveillance to the money in a central bank digital currency. Mike writes that the government could even turn off an individual's ability to make purchases. I mean, of course, it's just some crazy, weird future dystopia where if you take the wrong social or political positions, maybe you don't have the ability to buy and sell stuff, or you get a lower quality, for example. That can't happen here is never a mentality that we should have, because we have to recognize that when government has the power to do something, eventually someone with bad intentions, even if you love the power that they have, which you shouldn't, but let's say you do, eventually someone's going to look at that power and say, oh, I can do all kinds of nasty stuff with that. And they're going to get in there and come up with ways to do things that you or I would never even imagine, because we're not the bad guys who are trying to use power to control and manipulate entire populations. Now, I covered more of the dangers of a central bank digital currency and a first look at states taking action against them. For example, the Florida bill that I'm going to be covering here in a moment in an episode just in March of this year. Can states stop a central bank digital currency? I will link to that in the show notes after this live stream is done. So let's take a really, let's take a quick look at the bill in Florida, Senate Bill 7054, which was passed yesterday. It's going to be going to the governor's desk shortly. It's very straightforward. Hear from Mike Meharry's report yesterday. The bill defines, and again, this is Senate Bill 54, 7054. The bill defines central bank digital currency as, quote, a digital medium of exchange or digital monetary unit of account issued by the United States Federal Reserve System, which shouldn't exist, it doesn't say that, a federal agency, a foreign government, a foreign central bank, or a foreign reserve system that is made directly available to a consumer by such entities and that is processed or validated directly by such entities. So they're just making the technical definition of central bank digital currency in the legislation here. And under the Florida Uniform Commercial Code. More and more people are starting to hear about this. This is not something that we've looked at a lot over the years, but it's a very powerful tool to create, well, uniform approaches for the economy, which, of course, for financial institutions, it's nice because everything's smooth and it provides everyone. It has the same expectations on certain things in every state. But it also can be used as a way, when you centralize stuff, to do bad stuff. Now, Florida is going to change or is changing the Universal Commercial Code, Uniform Commercial Code, UCC, in Florida. Under the Florida code, money means a medium of exchange that is currently authorized or adopted by a domestic or foreign government. So it's just whatever the central government might happen to say about money. If they say a central bank digital currency is now money, then automatically Florida would say, well, that's money in the state of Florida. So what they're doing preemptively, Senate Bill 7054, Mike writes, would add, quote, the term does not include a central bank digital currency to that definition as money. So preemptively saying it doesn't matter what the feds do. If the feds call it money, we're not going to authorize it for business transactions here in the state. Now, it passed the Senate just last month. This is a very fast process that it went through in Florida, much faster than I've ever seen. On April 26th, it passed by a vote of 34-5. Pretty easy peasy. Then it went to the House and went right to the House floor because the companion bill had already gone through the committee process. And it passed again, like I said yesterday, by a vote of 116-1. I mean, usually when it's bipartisan, in almost every situation when it's bipartisan, they're going after your liberty. They're spending more. They're taking your rights. They're attacking them. They're spying on you, monitoring you. They're inflating the money supply. They're devaluing the currency, whatever it may be. And I know that doesn't usually happen by a vote, but anytime it's bipartisan, it's usually bad. So this is very unusual. I was expecting to see, and there was a debate just, I was watching the debates on the House floor yesterday, and there was, most of the bills were very much along party lines when they passed, 85 to 30, something like this. So I was surprised to see it go through at 116-1. Now, it does go to the governor. He's got 15 days, I think, to sign it after it's been transmitted. But as I said, he's the guy who proposed it last month. So it's going to get signed. We know this is going into effect in Florida. They're going to say central bank digital currencies are no longer authorized as money. Now, I don't know. Will it work? Can it work? I have no idea. This is a whole new thing for us here. But certainly we've been taking efforts to undermine and end the Federal Reserve System from the bottom up. And this is part and parcel of that. You need action by the states and individuals to do things that are opposite of what the central bank is telling us we need to do. That's the only way you can defeat that. But what I do know is waiting on the feds to do the right thing or counting on, well, Congress to stop and control a tool of the largest government in history, the ability to inflate the money supply and devalue, depreciate purchasing power even more than the nasty fiat paper money system that we have today. It's never going to happen. The Federal Reserve isn't going to end itself, and Congress and the executive branch, they're never going to do anything about it. So it's absolutely essential for the people and the states. And I'll get to that in just a moment. I do want to mention, as I did already, that I will be including links to stuff that I'm mentioning in this episode in a blog post. I publish one about 1 to 2 hours after the live stream is done over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. And you just go to that page and you scroll down, you see all the different episodes that we've done. And on each episode, there's an individual blog post that includes all the different platforms we're on. We're live streaming on Rumble and Odyssey and YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and Twitch and LinkedIn and probably something else. We also archive the video all over the place, Gab, Minds, etc. And we also, and Sovereign, don't forget Sovereign, S-O-V-R-E-N. And then we also have the audio-only podcast edition on all the big platforms, some of the small ones as well. If you see us missing from something that you prefer to watch or listen on, please do let us know, whether in a comment or email team at 10thamendmentcenter.com. So that's 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. I want to say hello to everyone out in the live chat. I really appreciate you guys being here, and I'll get back to the information on this bill and more in just a moment. There's Cheriton Farmer, Missouri, Joseph Bonamolo, appreciate you being here. Dave Simmons, Alt Reality, Dixie Strong, Tim Martin in Arizona, Senator DT, Irwin Havernick, and Omaha Cowboy Roy Rogers. Anarchy Television is a pretty great screen name over on YouTube. Florida Strong, Sharon Patriot, Richard Banks, and everyone else. I know I'm missing a couple of people. There's John Rhyme, Brad, and everyone else. Thank you so much for watching or listening, whether this is your first episode or you've been here for every single one since day one. Anyways, as I was saying, waiting on the federal government to limit the power of the federal government is a really dumb strategy. It's part of why we live under the largest government in the history of the planet, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger no matter which team is in charge. So ultimately, as the founders told us, it is up to the people and the states to stop the federal government when the federal government refuses to follow the rules that the people and the states have given to it in the Constitution. And these days, that's constantly. And I did an episode on, I've done many episodes on this. One, for example, that I think is good that I will link to in the show notes is, who is supposed to keep the feds in check? It's really not about somehow magically getting the feds to limit their own power. Here's John Adams back when he was one of the good guys, writing as Novanglis number 3 in February of 1775. He said, "Opsta Principius." He was repeating a long understood maxim that we saw James Otis Jr., who he absolutely loved and was certainly a firebrand of the revolution, use this phrase in the past. This was well understood, and it really means nip it in the bud. That's how Adams put it. Opsta Principius, nip the shoots of arbitrary power in the bud, is the only maxim which can ever preserve the liberties of any people. The only way you can preserve liberty in any people, any country ever in history on Earth, or I guess in the galaxy, is to nip the shoots of arbitrary power in the bud. And Adams went on to say, it's like government power, encroachment upon the Constitution is like a cancer. It grows faster and faster every single hour. And so once you allow it to get in there, you're going to have a big problem. And that's why I think this strategy in Florida, and there's a couple other states that I'll mention here in just a moment, but Florida has actually got this thing passed to treat CBDCs not as money, to not allow it to be used as money within the state, creates a level of conflict. And the more conflict that you have in advance before they try to implement, the better. And that's really what we have to do. And that's just what John Dickinson was saying as well. He said, "A free people can never be too quick in observing, nor too firm in opposing the beginnings of alteration, either in form or reality, respecting institutions formed for their security." So if you set up a constitution, for example, this was well before the Constitution for the United States. This was before the War for Independence, but this was part of the real American Revolution. The real American Revolution was not the war. It was a revolution, a radical change in the viewpoint and the principles of the people, as John Adams described it. And this is right in the middle of that. John Dickinson, in his sixth letter of a farmer from Pennsylvania, said, "A free people, if you're going to be a free people, you can't be too quick to notice when government is doing the wrong thing, and you can't be too firm in opposing what the government is trying to do to you." And that's, I think, is a great first step with Senate Bill 7054 in Florida. Now, there are other states that are already doing some copycat action. Some of them have filed legislation before this, but this same type of a bill to put it in the universe, in the Uniform Commercial Code. I'm getting this wrong every time I say UCC, I'll just say. We're seeing other states now file legislation like that. We just covered a bill in Ohio, House Bill HB 155 from Tom Young and Steve Demetrio, I think. I apologize if I get the name wrong or pronounced incorrect. It's basically the exact same legislation that passed in Florida yesterday for Ohio. I will link to our report on that in the show notes. And again, we don't have a report on this one yet. I know Alan Mosley was working one up, and so we'll have this published soon as well. It's got 20 sponsors already in South Carolina, House Bill 4373. So the Florida approach already passed there. Now introduced under consideration in Ohio, which is a long legislative session, and South Carolina, they'll probably wrap up for 2023 pretty shortly, but it'll be filed and on the books and ready for consideration unless leadership wants to move it. Anytime a bill sits, you know that the leadership in the state is not really, really pushing for it. So we'll see what happens, because almost every time the big bosses want to get something done, suddenly the whole process moves quickly. But we'll see what happens. South Carolina, if they don't consider it here in May or June, and I'm not sure exactly when this part of the session ends. Maybe someone in South Carolina would tell me here in the chat. But if they don't consider it right away here in 2023, it'll be ready for committee hearings starting in January of 2024. House Bill 4373. Now, same type of mentality is a bill in New Hampshire. House Bill 225. It already went through some of the hearing process, and this would basically prohibit the use of a central bank digital currency as money. Not in the same approach under the UCC in New Hampshire. So the legislative approach is different, but the effect is basically the same. And it was retained in committee in March. And they're in a two-year session. So that just means, rather than voting it down, so they can either, in a committee hearing on a bill in New Hampshire, you can either get a recommendation of ought to pass amendment, or ought not to pass. And every bill gets a vote on the House floor. So if you get it ought not to pass, almost every time just by a voice vote, it'll go down. So this tells me, and at least some interaction that we saw with the sponsor of the bill on Twitter, this tells me that they're at least interested in it, even if they weren't ready to move forward with it in March of this year. The committee chair decided to retain it for more hearings, and so that'll happen again later in this year and then early into January 2024. So that's New Hampshire House Bill 225. And then Mike Meharry just submitted a report on another bill in North Dakota that takes a different approach on this, but possibly has the same type of impact. I don't have the information on it yet. I just saw it come across my desk this morning. Now, this really is just the opening salvo. The first step, the first pushback by states against a potential central bank digital currency. And in many ways, the U.S. dollar is basically that already. We still do have the ability to use other stuff. And the more that we use currencies that compete with the Federal Reserve notes, their ability to inflate and empower the largest government in history, the better. Of course, gold and silver as money is what we support the most here, because that's in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 10. But that's a side note. And I think, like Thomas Jefferson said in the quote right at the beginning, it's essential really to continue taking action before they get their teeth sunk into you. And even if it seems almost impossible to stop, let's say, and I've heard people say, like, you're not going to do anything about this. Oh, someone on Twitter yesterday say, oh, that's cute. Florida's going to try to ban a CBDC. What happens when the feds, you know, they need some federal funding? I mean, there's all kinds of problems with that mentality. First of all, you're simping for a CBDC. You're a CBDC stan, I guess. And then on top of it, the idea that federal money is owned by the federal government, they're taking it from the people in the states, and they use it as a tool to manipulate and coerce the people in the states into doing things. Now, in many cases, the people are on board with that, but that's a side note and a side problem. But the idea that they're doing this in and of itself is a problem. But even if you look at the status quo under the Supreme Court, the idea that the feds can just take away all federal funding just is completely ignorant. This is not how it plays out. They can do it to some degree, and there's a couple of court cases if you really want to read into that stuff. It's South Dakota versus Dole, 1987. Where the court said, yes, the feds could withhold some highway funding, but it was like a 5% thing. And then there's NFIB versus Sebelius, the so-called Obamacare case in 2012, where they talked about an unconstitutional coercive, an unconstitutional gun to the head to say this to a state, you have to do this or we're going to take away all kinds of massive funding program that we took from your people in the first place. They just can't do it. So it's a little bit of a gray area, but in essence, it's like small amounts of funding that are directly related to a program that a state signed up for. They can't just start taking away funds on other programs just because a state is being uppity about something like cannabis, for example. And now we've got, you know, dozens of states doing that and getting away with it. And then also now we're starting to see resistance on other things like federal gun control in Missouri and Arizona and Kentucky and in Montana. And then here in Florida against the CBDC and hopefully in Ohio, South Carolina, New Hampshire, and elsewhere. But even if you think it's impossible to stop these people, it's still the duty of the states. It's still the duty of the people to try to do something about it. It's not just a good idea. It's not just something to think about. Duty is the word that the founding generation used in response to stuff like this. Here's James Madison. In his Virginia resolutions of 1798 against the hated Alien and Sedition Acts of that year, he said, the states have the right and are in duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. And he was discussing primarily attacks on free speech, which we still have today. But certainly, as soon as they go beyond the limits of the Constitution, this is an evil that's progressing against the states and the people. If it's a reserve power of the people of the several states, then it certainly is an encroachment. If it's an attack on liberty, it's an encroachment. Anytime, as Thomas Jefferson told us, as soon as they take a single step beyond the limits of the Constitution, they've taken a boundless field of power. And a CBDC, they've already taken a boundless field of power with the Federal Reserve and the fiat money system that they created. And this is the natural outgrowth of it. It's only going to get worse until people stop waiting for the government to limit its own power. And it's the duty of the states to interpose, according to the so-called father of the Constitution. But it's also the duty of the people themselves. Here's Dickinson writing in support of ratification of the Constitution in his Fabius Letter number 4. I think it was April 1788. Of course, I will link to it in the show notes. 10thamendmentcenter.com/path-to-liberty. He asked a question. You know, first of all, a good Constitution, he said, promotes but doesn't always produce a good administration. He recognized that no matter how good you can create a constitution, eventually you're going to have people who use it in a bad way. He said, well, when you have a bad administration, and certainly we've had bad administrations for my entire life and probably for generations before that, he said, but when you do have a bad administration, what is to be done? He said, the answer lies before the supreme sovereignty of the people. And if we again look at the foundational principles of the real American Revolution, which Adams told us started in 1761 with James Otis Jr.'s speech against the writs of assistance in February of 1761, he told us that an act against the Constitution is void. He was acknowledging that government wasn't sovereign, that the people themselves were sovereign, that power flows from the people, and a Constitution, written or unwritten, rules for government flows from the people, and so therefore it isn't up to the government to determine if the government did something that violated the rules given by the people to the government. The people had the final say. And so when government went beyond those limits, even if government claims it didn't, its act is void. Now, it's ultimately up to the people to treat it that way, too, and that's what Dickinson is telling us here. It's up to the supreme sovereignty of the people. He said, it is their duty to watch and their right to take care that the Constitution be preserved, or in the Roman phrase, on perilous occasions, to provide that the Republic receive no damage. And so we see this, the father of the Constitution tell us that it's the duty of the states to interpose between the people in each state and the federal government in response to unconstitutional federal acts, arresting the progress of the evil. And the penman of the American Revolution tells us that it's the duty of the people to keep them all in check. It's the duty of the people to take care that the Constitution be preserved. Now, this is the kind of message and this is the kind of activism work on a state, local, and individual level that we are working incredibly hard to do every single day. And nothing helps us get that job done more than the financial faith and support of our members. I saw a number of people out there who aren't members, and I'm very grateful for your support. I don't want to dox anybody, but you can join them for as little as $2 a month. If you got a couple of bucks of that dirty government fiat, throw it our way. We will take a stand against the empire, and we will try to reach and teach as many people how to defend the Constitution and liberty when government refuses to do so, which is constant. Again, that's 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. It starts out at $2 a month. We also have annual, 5-year, and lifetime options. And while I'm going through that quick promotional message, I want to say a huge, very sincere thank you to a handful of people who have joined us as members recently. And this is just a small number of them, but thank you so much. Goes out to Brad in Iowa, Lee in Texas, Marge in Delaware, Chris in Kentucky, Ray Dean in Idaho, and Chad in Washington State. Thank you so much for being a part of this with us. It's ultimately, again, it's our duty to do our best. Duty is ours, is the phrase, to take a stand for the Constitution and liberty. Let me take a look over on the live chat and see if there's any comments or questions I can get back to. Cool to see someone over on Twitch joining us. Oh, man, there's a lot. I'm going to have to read through this a little bit later today. I don't see something over the top of my help. CBDC and UBI is a trap. Certainly, all government programs really ultimately are a trap because, especially if we're talking about something that goes beyond the limits of the Constitution, as Jefferson told us, a single step beyond the Constitution is basically telling them that the limits don't apply. They can do whatever they want as long as they claim it's an emergency or that it's needed or it's got some kind of convenience to it. And that was specifically what he was talking about. And Jefferson was saying that in response to Alexander Hamilton's First National Bank, because he thought the idea of running a banking institution in the government was nowhere authorized by the people of the several states in the delegated powers of the Constitution. They wanted to create it anyways. And he's like, look, it's not here. You can't do it. And of course, Hamilton wanted to switch things around. He didn't care. He wanted his bank. And even though he told the people during the ratification debates that the federal government would be one of expressly delegated powers, if it's not there, they can't do it. Suddenly he discovered implied powers, and he suddenly discovered new definitions for the word necessary. Necessary originally was supposed to mean, well, necessary. And instead, in order to get the national bank, he told us that the word necessary means convenient. And Jefferson specifically talked about that as well. He said, the federal government is only authorized to exercise those powers which are necessary to carry out the other delegated powers. Needed. You can't do without it, you can't do it. Not just those that are merely convenient. Unfortunately, Hamilton won the day on that. Washington signed it into law. John Marshall, a few years later, adopted the meaning of necessary means convenient. Now they're going to make things, they're going to convenient us out of our liberty completely, whatever is left with a CBDC, unless we continue seeing more resistance like what is happening in Florida and hopefully Ohio, South Carolina, North Dakota, New Hampshire, and elsewhere. Well, I hope you guys found this interesting. I hope it was educational. I really appreciate you spending some of your time with me today. 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members to support us. Thanks so much for watching, and I'll see you next time here on the Path to Liberty.